My name is Melanie Sue Karen, for those of you that don't know me, and I've been a member at this church for my entire life in one form or another. The church's form, sorry, not my form. And now that you know this, hopefully you'll give me just a moment to indulge you in a few family business matters. What kind of mother would I be if I didn't wish my son a happy birthday today? He turns the big 10. So, yes, thank you. Happy birthday, Wesley. We're going to go quick so we can get to the whole party and presents part. No, just kidding. But I also want to take this opportunity to thank you, our beautiful church family. I'm not going to cry. As you know, my mother-in-law passed away a couple of weeks ago. And so it's been a busy, hectic couple of weeks for us. And I am so grateful, we as a family are so grateful and thankful for the encouragement and the prayer and the support that you guys have provided. We had a very, very smooth trip to and from Guyana, which is not always the case. And I know that it is no small part due to the fact that you guys have blanketed us in prayer. And so I want to just thank you, let you know that your prayers were appreciated and effective. You guys prayed away the mosquitoes. And I don't know if you know how big of a deal that is, but that's a really big deal and a huge relief to me. So thank you, thank you. We could not have gotten through this without you. And while we are still mourning, we know that she is in her home, in her forever home, and we have the continued love and support of you guys. I've said it 1,000 times, I don't know how people get through life without a church family, and especially without one as good as this one. So anyway, even though the mosquito thing is not a small thing, I'm going to use that as my intro to our sermon topic for this series, Small Things, Wise and Wonderful. We've seen God work in a lot of ways. Earlier in my life, I think I would have considered myself small. I felt like, not just because I'm a natural introvert and I'm happy to let other people take a lead and I love to follow leads, I don't know, I felt small. I would go to camp and I went off to college, I'd go on missionary trips, and I'd hear these stories about people that had this big, in my mind, big, beautiful conversion story, right? They left behind their worldly ways and they turned to Christ and they would talk about it and it would be so passionate and meaningful. They'd talk about how they had to leave their families behind. Their families weren't Christians and they had to worship in isolation or without the support of their loved ones. So I felt that compared to all of that, my story was pretty simple. I've been very blessed to grow up in a church and constantly be surrounded by people that know God and love me. So while, of course, I've had trials and doubts and growth throughout my life, I just feel like my story is fairly linear, relatively linear, compared to all these other people. And so nobody's ever going to write a screenplay about my life. It's not a big story. It's not suspenseful. But maybe that's one reason I've always been drawn to some of these smaller stories in the Bible. They feel more familiar. But I definitely believed for a while that my story just wasn't significant. And it was okay. I was okay with that. I don't need big. It's fine. But we'll come back to this later. So when we talked about this sermon series being about the small things, the story that I chose to dig into a little deeper was this one that Chuck just read for us. Elijah. They don't say that in the scripture, so sorry about that, but the Elijah and the widow of Zarephath. I feel like I'd heard it before, but I hadn't really dug any deeper. I hadn't really tried to figure out why it was in there. Why is it important enough to share with us thousands of years later? And it seems to me later when Jesus was around, he told stories a lot and parables, right? And the parables had bigger meaning. I feel like the same is true for some of these Old Testament stories. There's a little bit more there to be mined and to be learned from that. So I have to do a spoiler alert, though. I really don't think this ends up being a small story. A little bit in some ways, but there's a lot of big stuff in here, so you can help me decide if you think by the time we get through this, if it really was a small story. So again, been around the Bible a long time, but I forget things, so I had to go back and remind myself of the context that we have for this story. So Elijah is a prophet, and a pretty bold one at that. He really liked to start things with the king at the time, King Ahab. And he was so passionate about getting the Israelites to turn away from Baal, the god of that time, the pagan god of that time, because they had started to stray and worship Baal themselves instead of our God. He was so passionate about turning them around, he decided he would pray for a drought, which, you know, it's hot. This is a good time to be thinking about droughts. 3 years, though. He prayed for a 3-year drought, and God granted that prayer. So here we are in the middle of this 3-year drought in the country, and they provided, God provided for Elijah. At the very beginning of the story, it talked about the brook. He had sent Elijah to this brook and had ravens bring him meat and bread to sustain him while he could drink from this brook. So he was taken care of in a way. I don't know that living by a brook in a drought is the way I would like to be taken care of, but I think this works. It obviously got the job done. But after the brook dried up, he sent him to Zarephath, and he said, I'm having this widow that there provide for you. So Elijah does that. He goes to Zarephath. He meets her as soon as he enters the town. And as you can see, first he asks her for water. She doesn't seem to, you know, that seems reasonable. She goes away to start to try to get him the water. But then when he requests bread, she balks at that one a little bit. She turns around and she says, maybe you haven't heard. There's this drought. And now I'm actually getting ready to cook my family's last meal. I have enough flour and water, or flour and oil, to make one more loaf of bread, and then we're going to die. There's nothing left. Now, what I don't really understand, I'm going to have more questions than answers, by the way, so if anybody knows these answers, feel free to see me after. But it's interesting to me that she says, as surely as your God lives. I don't know what that means. How did she know? How did she know that who his God was? Because it was not her God, right, at this time. She was a Gentile. But something about Elijah must have captured her attention. Maybe she knew who he was. Maybe he was famous enough that she understood who he was and what he was about. Maybe he had a commanding presence. Maybe he spoke with authority. Maybe he had kind eyes. I don't know. But something about what he said to her touched her. And that promise that he said, if you do this for me, you will be provided for. And she believed it. Maybe she was so desperate. I don't know. When you get to that point, I can't imagine, and you want me to start crying, I'll talk more about this. But if you talk about having to say goodbye to your children or not being able to provide for your children, that's a pretty desperate place to be. So maybe she was just desperate. But she did it. She said, okay, I'm going to go use my last food, and I'm going to feed this total stranger before I feed my family. Guys, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it, but she was willing to share her last meal. That is not small. It may seem small. The jars were small. There was a little bit of food, but that was a big, big moment. Now, God did what he promised he would do. He kept that flour and that oil coming. He kept refilling those jars, and she was able to feed herself and her family and Elijah throughout the rest of the drought. That's a miracle. The flour and oil, small ingredients, but a big miracle. So then, we actually didn't read this part, but later on, her son dies. And Elijah's like, God, why did we do this? This doesn't make sense. He prays to God and brings the son back to life. I had forgotten that part. That's not small. That's huge. Her usage of her resources, what God had given her in these little jars, using that, he used it to make big things happen. So, not small. So, what I've started to realize is that in my brain, small sometimes seems to mean insignificant. And that's a lie, folks. That's absolutely not true. These acts might be small in terms of the resources they required, but they are not small in their impact. This is key. She didn't lead an army. She didn't part waters. She didn't rain down fire or topple towers or spend years building a big boat. She just did what God asked her to do, using the resources God had already given her and continued to provide. So I believe that God is using this story to show us that in his math, we know that's not the same as our math, small does not equal insignificant. So when I have a thought and conclusion like this, I like to test it out. Is it just this one time? Do I need it? Okay. So I decided to try to find some other things that are small yet significant, and creation's a great place to turn. So in creation, we see lots of big things. We hear about lions and elephants and sharks and predators, and those are big things. But if we look to the small things, plankton. We've probably heard of plankton, right? These tiny, tiny little organisms, billions and trillions of them floating around in the ocean. They can't even swim, which I didn't know. They just float. And they are food for, like, whales. I mean, they're tiny, but they also produce 70% of the Earth's oxygen. What? Small but mighty. Ants, anybody have those running around their kitchen right now? Yes, we take these small guys for granted because they clean up dead stuff. They spread seeds, they aerate the soil, they recirculate nutrients, and demonstrate the power of massive cooperation. But some people say without ants, our entire food chain would collapse. We wouldn't have the plants, we'd have too much dead stuff. It's wild. Small, not small. And then my favorite ones are the little coral. Because I didn't know this till I was like an adult. Coral is a single tiny little organism, right? We think of coral reefs and think of these giant structures like in Australia. It's a tiny, tiny little organism, and they live in colonies, and when they get together, they produce calcium carbonate. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't remember that for a second. And it creates this hard structure, and it turns into a reef, and then the reef gets bigger, and we have reefs all over the world that are miles and miles and miles long and are the keystone of an entire ecosystem, right? If you're a documentary junkie like me, you've probably seen one or two that show you what happens when the reefs go down. It's not pretty. These are small, seemingly insignificant little organisms that create an entire ecosystem that then has implications throughout our entire natural world. So, if this hasn't convinced you that small is not insignificant, there's all these stories, many, many stories that some of the other friends of ours have shared throughout this series, where God uses small things, but it does not mean they're insignificant. He gives them significance. So I know somebody talked, and I can't remember who it was, about the cup of cold water. That's one we talk about a lot in Matthew 10, where Jesus says, even a cup of cold water given in my name. I mean, that's what he wants from us. Again, he doesn't need us to do all the big things. He's asking us to share water in his name, with his intent. So we learn that logical, small is not insignificant, and God agrees. The other things I thought of that kind of he's taken a small thing and made it real, fruit on a tree, a baby in a basket, a staff in the hand, smooth stones in a brook, a young shepherd boy, two small coins, a boy's lunch of bread and fish, a star in the sky, a baby in a manger. All of these things alone are small. It is God in them that makes them big. So, not only does physical size have no correlation with significance, I would argue that religious size does not either. It's the size of your faith. It's the size of our surrender to his will that he will use to bring his glory. We see that all throughout the Gospels. Small faith is significant, and great faith is rewarded. So, at some point along the way in my life, I realized God doesn't need big. He is big. He doesn't need me to do big things because he's the big one. He just needs me to follow him. So even when I was feeling that my story didn't sound all that exciting and significant, that doesn't matter. That's not what he wants. That was my worldly view of significance, and it's flawed. So what I've tried to do in my life is figure out what God is filling my jars with. I tell you, we all have jars, and they're all filled with different things, but we've all got them, and he provides, and he refills. So what I try to do is when someone asks me to do something, I think, okay. When somebody I trust asks me to do something, I think, okay, I'll do it. Let God fill my jar. God's going to fill my jar. long, long, long time ago. Remember, I've been at this church a long time. It was to ask, somebody asked me to teach the 4 and 5 year olds. Did that for a long time. Loved it, it was great. God continued to fill my jars. Then I was asked to be a greeter. Then I was asked to serve communion. And then I was asked one time, I think, to kind of do a one-off Sunday afternoon class. And then at one point, I was asked to do a communion thought. Again, a little scary, a little intimidating, but I trust God to fill my jar. He will be there. He will guide me. This is not about me. It's about him. So I'm not always sure that the bread I make with my oil and water from my jar is the tastiest bread you've ever had, but it's his, and he will use my bread, even if it's undercooked or lumpy or stale. He's going to find a way to use it because I emptied my jar. So one day, fast forward many years, someone says, hey, Mel, we need some more people to get up here and talk. And I say, not a part of my plan. But what did God need? What did we need? What did this family need? Okay, fill my jar. Please fill my jar. Let's do it. Again, his glory, not the size of the offering. So I challenge all of us. God will present you with opportunities to empty your jars. You have to watch for them. They're not always obvious, but do it. Take the opportunity. He's given us this promise that says, I will keep refilling. I will put it back in. You just need to pour it out. So, feeling small, I believe, is a lie, and it's a cop-out. If you're telling yourself things like, oh, I don't have the resources, or I don't have that gift, it's not true. I mean, we can't do all things. I get that. I'm not saying every single thing we have to be able to do, but you know what I'm talking about. You know when you're presented with something and you want to say, I'm not good enough for that, or I don't think it would go over well. I think we are called to boldly empty our jars. So your jars might be filled with possessions. You might have things that other people don't have and they need. They could be circumstances. They could be your spiritual gifts. Your jar could be filled with worship. We all have them. God asks us to use them. No one knows but him what will come of that obedience of emptying our jar. And that's not our job, friends. We have no idea how he'll use that, right? Carrie had no idea how her story would touch lives today, but it did. I had to bring my tissue up, right? He'll use our jars and the contents of our jars for his glory. So, do the small things. Send a note, share a smile, check in on a friend, babysit for a date night. If you need ideas, take a minute and think about the little things people have done for you that have made a difference. My kids love mail. When they get mail from some of you guys, they get so excited, and all it says is something like, hey, it was great to see you at church on Sunday, or great job doing this. They think that's so cool. They're emptying their jars. They're doing the small things, and my kids love that. So use steel material. It doesn't have to be original. Do what somebody else is doing. I incessantly make my kids say thank you for stuff. So like we're at the checkout, we say thank you. We're at the passport counter, we say thank you. And one time we were at a carnival and there was this guy robotically getting kids on and off the Ferris wheel, just, you know, on and off. And it was one of these little ones in the kiddie area. I think they were like 6 and 4, I don't know. Robotically getting on and off. And they both hopped off out of their little chair thingy and turned around and looked at him and said, thank you, and then just kept going. And I looked back and the smile on this man's face was priceless. He had just been staring off into nothing for a long time. And again, that didn't change his whole life, but I bet it changed his day. And who knows, he might have been having the worst day of his life. I don't know. It's little things. Let's do it. Let's be intentional and purposeful about it. And let God deal with the rest. We want him to. He's better at this than we are. We'll let him take it from there. So, a long time ago, 45-ish years ago, there was a church in West Chapel, Texas, that sent a group of missionaries, to Guyana, South America. And they held revivals every night, and they had people coming. And they took in a woman named Sandra Sukaran. and they taught her, and they loved her, and they came back every year, actually. Their jar was mission work, and they went, and they taught her how to love God and how to love people, and she did. She loved hard, and she loved long. She raised her kids to love God. She converted her husband from Hinduism to Christianity, and she would never admit this, and thankfully she's not here to hear me say it. She led that church in that little town in Guyana for decades. Not officially, but she was there every Sunday taking the offering and putting it to good use and making the communion trays. She led that church for decades. Her son left Guyana and came to St. Louis to go to school. She would not stop hounding him to find a church home. And so finally, he Googled Churches of Christ, found the one closest to his apartment, and showed up at the Richmond Heights Community Center at Mid-County Church of Christ in 2008, 7, 6, I can't remember. I was a greeter that Sunday. It took a long time after that, guys, but I was a greeter that Sunday, emptying my jars, right? Again, introvert, so greeting, But you know what? I love these people. I love all you people. You make me smile, so seeing you in the morning is just fun. So, emptying my jar as a greeter, and I meet this young man, and I mean, I had a thought in my head, but again, that's a whole nother story. To this day, this is my husband, if you hadn't figured that out. Mommy Sue Karen, emptying her jar, brought me more than I could ask or imagine. I have this beautiful family because of her and what she did, because of these missionaries that took a week out of their year, every year or maybe every other year, to go spend time in this tiny little town in the hot and mosquito-infested region of Guyana, South America. Guys, we don't know what he will do with our empty jars, but he will do it. All we have to do is show up. All we have to do is empty them. So, the Spirit is alive. And my friend Carrie talked about worthy. And while you did, I Googled it because I was like, this totally fits. So I made a little last minute adjustment. We sang this morning of the worthiness of our God. Worthiness is someone deserving of respect, admiration, and attention. Guys, we're emptying our jars for him. We're giving him a platform to get into people's lives and do his work. So please, if nothing else, go away from today, think about your jars, what they're filled with, and get them empty. And then come tell me about it, because I want to hear. Thank you. Thank you for emptying your jars for us, and thank you for the jars that will be emptied to come.